Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Our guest tonight will be Richard Munchkin, former co-host of this show. Although tonight he's here in his role as one of my favorite wit and raconteurs. So he has lots of stories to tell. So we're going to, I'm looking forward to this tonight. This should be fun. We received an email question about the game Dream Cart. This is a videopoker.com game where you pay 10 coins per line instead of the usual 5 coins. Every now and then, instead of a normal 5th card, you get what they call a dream card, which means the best possible card available, given the other 4. So if your first 4 cards are 4 to the royal, and you get the dream card, then you get a dealt royal. Since it's on a multi-line game, it's a triple play, 10 play, 5 play spin poker, something like that, you get a dealt royal on a big game. So that's good. If you don't like the dream card the machine select, you can change it. On jacks or better, the dream card is 100% accurate. On bonus poker, they make one occasional systematic mistake. Assume your first 4 cards are the 2, 5, 6, 8 different suits. And then you get the dream card. Now, in jacks or better, you're going to get another 2, 5, 6, or 8. So it's going to be a low pair. And they're all the same. And so it doesn't really matter which one you get. In bonus poker, it does matter. A pair of 2s is worth more than a pair of 5, 6s, or 8 simply because 4 2s pay 200 and the other ones pay 125. But sometimes they give you a 5 or an 8. And I assume that's because they use the same algorithm to do bonus poker dream cards as they did for jacks or better, because the games are pretty similar. I don't know. I haven't played other variations of jacks or better or of dream card, so it's possible they make other mistakes in those games. I just don't know. Another feature of Dream Card is they try to trick you. Or they might phrase this, they try to make the game more interesting. And so they try to make the Dream Card so as to give you the trickiest or most interesting choice. For example, assume your first 3 cards are the King, Queen, 4 of Hearts. And the 4th card's a Blackjack. Now, in Jacks or Better, any other king, any other queen, any other jack will give you a high pair, and they're all equal in terms of EV, and you should pick the high pair instead of the king, queen, instead of anything else. However, every time, they will give you the jack of hearts, which gives you the king, queen, jack of hearts to do against the pair of jacks. Now, this is, so if you're somebody who normally selects 3-card royals over a high pair, you're going to be making more mistakes than usual in this game because this choice is going to be coming up more, and you keep making this mistake over and over again. Now, if you know the game cold and you don't make the mistake, then it doesn't matter. But if you don't know the game cold, this invites you to make more mistakes than usual. In some games, that particular choice is a penalty card situation in double bonus where flushes pay 6. King, queen, jack versus a pair of jacks. Sometimes you hold the king, queen, jack. Sometimes you hold the pair of jacks. So you're going to get this tough decision much more often in dream card than you will in the normal game. Now, sometimes Dream Card pays just a little bit more, like 0.02% higher than the base game. Sometimes it pays a full percent higher. Now, I've looked at the table found on wizardofodds.com as to which Dream Card games pay most, and I didn't see an easy-to-memorize pattern as to how to predict which games are going to pay more. So you have to, like, look at that table. And but I have played it when it's the highest returning game in a casino. I don't like the sound effects. I like Quick Quads sound effects. I don't like when it says Dream Card winner. Although I suspect Mike will, because he likes pretty ladies, and it sounds like it's a real sultry voice that uses that. So, Shaq, do you have any comment on this game?
You certainly know more about it than I do. I haven't played it very much just for the purpose of writing about it on my site. I do know that when I first wrote about it, I claimed that it gave correct strategy, which is what I told, and I didn't know this about bonus poker. And suddenly, everyone was writing to me saying, no, it gives lousy advice, and they kept sending me screenshots from videopoker.com. So I'd like to make it clear that videopoker.com doesn't necessarily use the same algorithm for selecting the green card as the actual game.
But it's pretty close, because this game is invented by videopoker.com. It is simplified, but good. All right, so the Riviera has a $1,000 loss rebate program for new signups. I'm not eligible because I played there recently under another promotion. Shaq, you tried this a couple days ago. Tell us about the promotion and what else you found out.
This is a strong promotion, and it's the kind of thing that doesn't happen very often. It's worth, say, $500 to $600, depending upon how you play it, with a very small downside. You don't see these kind of offers every day. Here are the rules. If you lose up to $1,000 on slots, they will give you that amount back in free play. For example, if you lose $1,000 on slots, they will give you $500 in free play immediately and $500 on your next trip. And I believe you have to wait about 2 weeks to ask for it. There are some restrictions. For the loss of the $1,000, you can't use high-denomination video poker, which leaves pretty much reeled slots. And for the free play, you can use almost anything you want. I heard that you're not allowed to play progressive games, but that's not any big impediment. They have at least 8-5 bonus poker, so you're going to get almost the full value of the rebate. So I played it on Tuesday. I had never played slots there before, but I had some table game play and bingo play in my history. And at first they said I wasn't eligible. And then I said, but look here, the rules say no slot play in the last 2 years. And she talked to somebody else and said, okay, I stand corrected. You're allowed to do this. So she gave me my card, and I played $25 two-play double diamond in the high limit room.
Two coin.
Yeah, two coin.
Good choice.
Sorry, good catch. So that was $50 a pop, so it would only take 40 bets to, 20 bets to run through the whole thing. And I ran through it pretty quickly. I just hit one small win and gave the whole thing back within probably a couple minutes, walked back to the cashier, said I lost my $1,000, and they hit a few things on the computer and said your first $500 is ready to play, and gave me a voucher to come back after May 3rd for the other $500. So I ran through the $500 in 8-5 bonus poker, and we'll come back later for the other half. So it was very efficient. There was, except for originally being denied, which I had to argue a little bit about, it went efficiently, and of course I lost, but that doesn't mean it's a bad promotion. My strategy.
And you didn't lose. You were actually broke even.
Yes, I basically broke even. Now, what would be good strategy, you might ask? I think that this is normally the kind of promotion where you want to either win a lot or lose trying. But what holds you back is that you don't want to sit there grinding out the play going for a big win too long. So I think something like a $2,000 win goal is a good one. I believe you said 1,000. I wouldn't argue that either, but I would certainly not just quit at a $100 win. I would go for at least a $1,000 win or go bust trying.
Very good. Munchkin, we haven't introduced you yet, but and you're not a slot player, but you have similar deals on table games. Do you have anything to add to this promotion?
Well, my one question is, do they have one of those electronic roulette wheels? You know, in the case of the Tropicana deal, you were allowed, they have one of those electronic roulette wheels, and you were allowed to play that, you know, as a slot machine. Do they have that at the Riviera, or did you look?
They have those games, and I should have said that they had some rules posted at the cashier with some rules that they added to this, and they also prohibit those electronic table games.
Oh, that's too bad. But yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you. I mean, I don't know what the payout structure is like on that double diamond game.
Nobody does.
But no, I don't mean the hold. I mean the you know, what are the payoffs like if you actually hit something? You know, hopefully it's a machine where you have big payoffs and not like a cherry where you get back, you know, two coins or whatever. But I mean, $1,000 win sounds like a low target to me. I would be more inclined to go for more unless it's hard to hit more on that particular machine. You know, I was that the highest denomination machine you could find, or was there anything above that?
There were some video slots where you could play up to 200 a pop, but that would be divided amongst lots of pay lines. So among the...
Oh, so you might get a lot of small payoffs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for the three real games, that was as high as it got in terms of denomination. And I was hoping... I don't even remember what the wins were, but I was hoping to just get one of the big ones and then quit playing.
Yeah, that would be my strategy as well.
The those of you who want to play it, like, don't lose 800 and then quit because you just can't bear to lose $1,000 all at once. You got to lose the whole thousand.
No, sorry to interrupt you. The rules are if you lose anything up to 1,000, they'll basically give it back to you, and they will round down to the closest increment of 100. So if you lost 800, they would give you 800 in free play.
Okay, good. And which is a lousy way to play it, because it shouldn't matter to you whether you lose 300 and get back 300, you lose 700 and get back 700, or you lose 1,000 and get back 1,000. You're going to get it back. So this is not real money you're playing with. And when you bet at all, then you're having a chance for one of these jackpots, 3,000, 4,000, 10,000, whatever it is. And so quitting early, you're giving up your chance that you might have hit something. Now, you probably won't. You probably are going to lose the full. I hit some button. Am I on?
Yeah, you're still on.
All right, good. You might have the chance to... I hit a button and I lost my train of thought.
I can hear you.
Okay, good. So... you might hit something. Now, there's virtually no chance of losing if you play it right, which means only playing the free play on one of the good machines, which is 8-5 bonus or 9-7 double bonus. These are slightly over 99%. You get slot club points. Possibly you're going to get something in the mail for losing the $1,000. But you need to come back. You need to play 500 this time and then 500 next time. And then you have to stop playing. The games there are pretty tight. 8-5 bonus is not a good game to play on a regular basis because the slot club doesn't pay nearly enough to make it worthwhile. So if you can't, if you're not the type of person who can go in and play a fixed amount and then leave, this might not be the promotion for you. But if you are, this is pretty lucrative.
Can you say something, Munch?
Yeah. Well, are you just testing the audio or something about the promotion?
No, I was going to say that I was not picking up Bob on my headphones.
You know, whatever button he hit, he has gotten fainter. It's harder for me to hear him.
All right. Is this any different? I'm on a different microphone now.
Yeah, that's better.
All right. So just for that, I'm going to introduce your Munch. That'll fix you.
Yeah.
Now, Richard Munchkin was the host of Gambling with an Edge for 6 months. He decided to quit the show because he lives in Southern California, and driving to Vegas and back was to do the just the show was a burden. And he felt the show suffered in quality when he did it from his home via telephone. When he left the show, we lost a great storyteller. Munchkin's been an advantage gambler for 40 years or so. All kinds of interesting things have happened to him. And he's the kind of storyteller that he can make telling about taking out the trash an interesting event. So we've been begging him to come back for a night of storytelling. We finally got him to relent. So now we have him. Richard Munchkin, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks. Well, it's good to be back. Not quite 40 years, Bob. I'm not quite that old yet. But 30-plus, anyway.
30-plus, anyway. All right. So, the young Richard Munchkin. Now, there's a story that I heard you reference, but I've never heard the punchline, so I'm interested in this one, too. You were gambling in Russia. You won a lot of money. The casino couldn't pay you back. There were certain mob connections. What happened?
Yeah, well, it was on my second trip to Russia, and I went into a small casino, and it was kind of a weird place because first of all, I should say when this was about a dozen years ago when casinos were popping up on every corner in Moscow, like 7-Elevens, and a lot of times these guys would open these things and didn't really have enough money to behind them, but. So this particular one, it was inside a big hotel, like a 4-star hotel, and just off the lobby was a discotheque. And then if you go through the discotheque, in the back was a door that led you into this little casino. And they had maybe 6 or 8 tables back there. And so I went into this casino, and there was one other player in there and betting small. And I sat down, and it just happened to be one of those things where I just got ridiculously lucky right off the bat, and in the first shoe or two, I won, you know, about $20,000. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of money for this place, and, you know, I better stop right here. So I ended the play, and I went to cash out, and they say basically, you know, we don't have the money to pay you. So I said, well, how much do you have? And they said this amount, and I cashed out that amount. I was like, always get as much money out of them as you can right from the start.
Was this like 5,000 or 10,000 or?
No, it was basically my buy-in plus a little bit, something like that. You know, I got basically back the money I had bought in and maybe a little bit more, and I was left with 22 $1,000 chips.
Uh-huh.
And now, one of the things about playing in foreign countries, especially when there's a good game, it seems like there's always some guy who has moved in and camped out and is now living there. And he becomes really an invaluable resource for anybody going there to play. So in this particular case, it was this guy named Jeff who was Australian, and Jeff had gotten there early and had played everywhere, been barred everywhere, and at the time he had now taken over managing one of the poker rooms. And he was my go-to guy. Anytime I had questions, you know, I would go to Jeff, and he always had the answers. So I called Jeff, and I say, hey, these guys, you know, they didn't have the money to pay me. And he said, why did you win so much money there? And I said, well, I had this list that you know, says that it was okay to win $25,000 at that casino. He goes, that list was from last year. This year the economy's gone down. You know, they can't afford it. So I said, okay, so what do I do? He says, well, I have good news. He said, now, the way it works in Russia is the police are completely ineffectual. Like, the government doesn't function. So everything is run by the Russian mafia, and every business has what's called a roof, and the roof is your local mafioso who you pay protection money to. And so Jeff says to me, you're in luck. That particular casino, their roof is Chechen mob, but my roof here at the poker room is also Chechen mob, and my roof is higher than their roof. So I think we can collect this money.
So from the mob.
This
is good news.
Well, it's good news, except I'm thinking, do I really want to get in between two factions of the Chechen mob? You know? Jeff tells me, my guy is out of town. Go back there tomorrow night and see if they'll cash anymore. Because the guy at the casino had told me, come back tomorrow, the owner will be here, and he'll give you your money. So I go back the next night. And he says, the owner, he's not here, but he'll be back tomorrow night. And I said, well, how much money do you have? He says, well, $1,000. I say, okay, cash me out one chip. You know? So now my problem now is it's Sunday now, and I'm supposed to fly home on Monday morning, right? So I keep calling Jeff, and Jeff's guy is coming in on Sunday night. And Jeff says, well, look, I had 21 chips now. And he says, will you take 18,000? I was like, deal, here. You know, it was like, well, no, you got to wait for this guy. But, you know, if you'll take 18, I was like, I'd be happy to take 18, you know. So I'm waiting around the poker room for this guy, and all of a sudden, this girl who works in the poker room says, come, we must go. I'm like, go where? She's like, to the casino. We're meeting the men. I was like, okay. So I jump in the cab with this girl. We go to the place. It's now night and dark. You know, there are lights on in the lobby. And I can see in the lobby these two huge guys with a little short guy standing in between. And they look just like Russian mobsters from the cartoons, black suits, black T-shirts, you know, and these massive guys. So I go in with the girl. They start talking in Russian, and I look over at the entrance to the casino, and every casino there has metal detectors and guards. You have to go through and check your gun at the door. And the guards are visibly nervous. I mean, really sweating and not liking these guys that are standing in the lobby.
Uh-huh.
And so the girl talks, and they say, okay, we go in, right? And now we go in, and I go through the metal detector, and they start arguing in Russian, and it's getting louder and louder. And the guys on the inside take me by one wrist, and the guys on the outside take me by the other wrist, and are now playing tug of war with me in the metal detector.
Like olive oil in those Popeye cartoons.
Yeah, and they're basically saying, the guys inside do not want these mob guys coming in. They're saying they're not allowed to come in, only I'm allowed to go in with the girl. And they're arguing about it, and finally they say, okay. We go back out to the lobby to have a powwow. They talk to the girl says, okay, we're going in. If they give you the money, we come right back out. If they don't give you the money, don't say a word, just come back out. So I go, okay. So now I go in with the girl. The boss is there, and he is white and sweating. And he says, this is very bad. You should not have brought those men here. This is very bad. I said, do you have my money? No. I said, okay, I'm leaving. He said, look, you come back in 1 week, and we'll give you $2,000 or $3,000. Then you come back the next week, we'll give you $2,000 or $3,000. I said, look, I'm leaving tomorrow for America. You know, I'll just give the chips to them. They'll collect from you. He was like, only you can collect these chips. I was like, well, you'll have to take that up with them. So we go back outside. The girl tells him what happened. The little guy says, no problem. Give me the chips. I was like, Jeff. I have to give them to Jeff because I'm not just going to give the guy the chips without the $18,000,
right.
You know. So I go back to the poker room. Jeff says, I have to call Jeff. He's in a poker game in some other place. And he says, okay, just leave the chips with the girl in the poker room. I was like, no, Jeff, I need the $18,000. He's like, all right. When you come down in the morning to catch your flight, the money will be there. Give her the chips then. I said, okay, fine. So I came down in the morning. Sure enough, there was the $18,000. I gave her the chips. I got on a plane, and I headed out of there, and I was elated to only take a $3,000 loss on all of it. And I did hear that it took them about 6 months, but they did collect all the money.
Wow.
And that was my last trip to Russia. I decided after that one I was not going back.
All right. Shaq, I don't know how you're going to get a better story out of him than that, but you're welcome to try.
Yeah. Well, if I may follow up, what brought you to Russia in the first place? I've heard lots of stories of good advantage plays there. For example, I heard they had early surrender in blackjack, giving you a pretty strong advantage with just basic strategy.
That was the least of it, Mike. It was all the games had early surrender. They would have happy hours where they would pay 2-1 or 3-1 on blackjack, and this would go on for 2 hours every day. They would pay, 7-1 on 3-7s. I mean, they had just unbelievable rules everywhere you went. It was advantage off the top. They were just giving away money, basically. And the reason I went was a friend of mine discovered the games. He basically went and played them all, got burned out, and he called me up. And he said, look, I found all these really good games. How about you go play them for me? I'll put up the money, you go play, and, we'll split it. And so the first trip I went, the economy was really good. But this is why I hate counting cards. I mean, even these games that were advantage off the top, I was there for 10 days and lost like $70,000 or $80,000. And, I just felt awful. So even though none of it was my money because I was playing for this guy, so I agreed to go back because, I didn't want to leave him in this big hole. So I went back the next year, and now the economy had really tanked. And I actually felt it's the only time I've felt unsafe traveling in other parts of the world. I really felt like it was not safe there anymore. I did win all the money back on the second trip, so I dug out of the hole I had been in, and so my friend didn't take a big loss on the deal, but I didn't really make anything either. But I did get to see Russia, so that was cool.
Very interesting. And you tell a lot of interesting stories about other people in your book, Gambling Wizards, which is one of my favorite books on my shelf of gambling books.
Oh, thank you.
And one thing that came up a lot about in these interviews was betting on golf. And your book aside, it seems like a lot of professional gamblers just love betting on golf. And do you play golf? And if so, do you like to bet when you're out there?
I have always said that if I could learn to play golf, I would make a fortune. Because, yes, everybody gambles on golf. And for some reason, when I used to be a backgammon player, I would be able to play with people that none of the other good players could play with. For some reason, people would look at me and decide that I was hopeless. And I met a guy who was a golf hustler one time who had one leg, and this guy offered to play me golf and use his prosthetic leg as his club. and I said to him, first he offered to give me a stroke a hole, which is an enormous spot. I said, look, you don't know me from Adam. That's an enormous spot. How can you offer me that? And he said, I can just look at you and tell you can't play. And that was exactly the attitude I used to get when I played backgammon. So someday, when I have more time and inclination, I would love to take up the game of golf because I think there's big money to be made at it.
You mentioned backgammon. That's where I first met you back in the 70s. Now, you lived in Vegas for a time then, and if you played in Vegas from the 70s to the 90s, you had to put up with Max Maxiculli, who was kind of a crime boss in his own way.
Right.
Tell us about playing with Max.
Well, yeah, so Max ran Vegas backgammon, and, I had my most notorious backgammon incident happened. I don't remember exactly the year, but maybe it was, 1980 or early 80s. And there was this poker player that they used to call CK for Crazy Kid. And he one year won the World Series 7-card stud event. And he had a backer. The prize money was $90,000. He got half of it. The backer got the other half. So he had $45,000. And he was one of my original sort of backgammon pigeons when I moved to Las Vegas. I started out spotting him 6-1, and then it went to 3-1, and then it went to double aces, which, if you know anything about backgammon, this is just an enormous spot. But CK just was one of those people who would find a way to lose. So anyway, CK played Max at backgammon, getting some big spot, and lost 15,000 of his 45. And the second night, he lost another 15,000. And so he came to me and he said, "Are you a favorite against Max?" And I said, "Yeah, I believe I'm a favorite against Max." And he said, "How about if I back you to play?" And I said, "Okay, fine." So I sat down to play with Max, with CK there, with, you know, he was the one providing the money. And basically, I just got rolled into the ground and came to find out that, that Max had been using magnetic dice, that he basically had cheated CK out of this entire $45,000. And he would always wear these cowboy boots, and he would keep this big magnet, apparently, in the boot. And, you know, when he needed to roll doubles or things like that, he would, you know, reach down and pull the magnet out from his boot and hold it under the board and then roll the dice across it. And so, yeah, so my...
Double fives happen a lot when you have that magnet there.
Yeah, yeah, you don't win many races, I'll tell you that. And he was pretty blatant about it. You know, he would, we would be in an even race, you know, and he would send me the doubling cube. And,
which is,
you know,
a bad
I guess
move.
He thought it made him look like a crazy gambler, but in retrospect,
so, so you end up, you lost a lot to Max. Did you accuse him of cheating? Did you,
it all came out later. You know, he was kind of found out in the backgammon world, and everyone knew. I mean, he had some string where he won like 19 major tournaments in a row or something like that. And then it came out that, you know, yeah, he had been using rigged dice for quite some time and cheated many, many people.
With backgammon, with the dice, I know there's two different colors. Were both colors... Did both colors have the magnets, or how did he? And
well,
if not, go ahead.
We were playing in a club. There was a club on the corner of the Strip and Spring Mountain called Dirty Sally's, and that's where the backgammon club was. And they had this separate room with about a dozen backgammon tables in it, and they all had these little black dice. So, you know, he in that particular instance, you know, all the dice were the same color. But later he got beveled dice, you know, the clear dice. I mean, he had all different kinds. So he could basically switch in whatever color happened to be on the board.
Okay. Interesting. I'm glad that they caught him.
Yeah, he later went to prison for cocaine, you know, some kind of cocaine charge, and he died a number of years back.
Well, as long as it was for something. So another issue that comes up a lot, both in your books and just in other stories, is transporting large amounts of cash. And with the traveling that you do gambling, I'm sure that's an issue that you face. So how do you transport lots of cash, both on international trips and domestic trips?
Well, first thing I would say is anybody who would try to leave the United States or enter the United States with more than $10,000 without declaring it is out of their mind. I mean, there's no problem if you just declare it. You know, so but in my own case, if I'm carrying it out of the into the country, I declare it. But a lot of times I'll just wire it. Or, I mean, I'm fortunate that I've been playing long enough and I know enough people sort of around the world that I've been able to... The first time I went to England, basically, I went to England. I called up a player in England and said, "Look, I'm a friend of Kathy Holbert's, and I need £20,000. You know, and he met me that afternoon and handed it to me. You know, so I've been able to make arrangements like that where I can get money from somebody locally and avoid the currency exchanges and stuff that way. But another way would be, you know, to just wire the money. There are also some little tricks like you can go into any American Express office and pay money toward your American Express bill. So let's say you're in Australia, you go into the American Express office and you pay $50,000 toward your American Express bill, and then you get home and say, oh, well, you know, gee, I 49,000 of that, I guess it's overpayment, you know, and they send you a check. you know. Another thing is you can buy traveler's checks and make them out to yourself or to other people and then sign them. And now it's no longer a negotiable instrument, so you don't have to declare it anymore.
In Korea, apparently you were exchanging money or something, and something weird happened.
Oh, yeah. Well, in Korea, you know, this was a country where they had currency restrictions. And again, you know, there was a guy who had moved there, a guy who had been a dealer at Sam's Town and had learned to count cards, and he found these incredible games in Korea, and he just moved over there. His name was Marty. And so when I first got to Korea, I'd been told, okay, you know, if you have any questions, call this guy Marty. So I called Marty, and he says, okay, the first thing you need to do is change the money on the black market, because if you take it to the casino, they're going to give you this really awful rate, right? So I say, okay, fine. So Marty takes me to the local black market, right? And we go to this market, and we walk down this alley full of, you know, fish in bins and octopus and all this, and people making kimchi. And, you know, we get back to this gate, and we go into this guy's house, and it's a typical Korean house. There's no furniture. You sit on the floor. And Marty says, he introduces me. This is Mr. Lee, you know. And Marty says, okay, I got to go. And Marty leaves, right? So I say to Mr. Lee, I want to change money. Okay, how much? I say $20,000. He says, okay, give it to me. And he counts out the $20,000. He's got a little safe in the corner, right? He opens the safe. He puts my $20,000 in it. He closes the safe. He says, come back at 7 o'clock.
Uh-huh. I was like, find this place again.
No. Give me the money. He's like, no problem. Come at 7. I'm like, no. Give me back my money. So he says, okay, you know, heavy sigh. Okay, you know, he opens the safe. He gives me back the money. And he says, come back at 7 o'clock. And I said, okay. And so, you know, I go back to my hotel, and I call Marty, and he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. Just go back at 7, right? So now at 7, it's dark. The average income at that time in Korea was $200 a month.
Hmm.
I'm walking down these dark alleys.
With 8 years' income on you.
Yeah, and they know I'm coming, and they know I'm bringing $20,000 in cash, and I'm thinking to myself, This is insane. I'm going to get killed. I'm going to get robbed. I mean, why am I doing this, you know? Anyway, I get to the guy's house. Sure enough, I come in. He offers me tea. I give him the $20,000. He gives me all the Korean money, and everything was fine. And after spending a lot of time in Korea and getting to know this guy, I believe 100% I could have left him the $20,000 and come back at 7 o'clock and had no problem. And, you know, because what Marty said to me is, look, this guy is the black market for this entire neighborhood. You know, your $20,000 might be 10% of what he does in a day. And he can't get the reputation of ripping people off. You know, but not knowing that and being in Korea for the first time, it was a pretty scary experience.
Well, it
was kind of eye-opening to me that you know, cultures are different, and you know, maybe you don't need to worry so much about some of this stuff.
So your friends in Korea and Russia proved to be invaluable, and however, I'm sure we could all tell stories of relationships with other advantage gamblers that went bad for one reason or another. So there's obviously pros and cons. But in general, do you like to team up with professional gamblers in a team or do your own thing?
I probably would not play at all if I had to play alone. Like my experience in Russia, the reason it was so bad is because I was by myself. And I almost always play with at least one other partner. And a lot of the games that I play require two or three people to be on the table. So, but to me, it's about the team and about the camaraderie of being with the people that I'm there playing with. And kind of when I look back at my favorite moments you know, involving gambling, they almost always have to do with being with other guys, either at some big comp meal after we've made a score, or being in a hotel room where four of us or six of us are in one room at 2 o'clock in the morning, coming up with some new idea to do something, you know, or another, you know, some of the best moments have been where maybe three of us are on a game and something happens and impromptu we are able to communicate with each other and take advantage of some situation that isn't what we were there for in the first place, but because we're all kind of in sync, we see something and we realize we can take advantage of it. For me, it's a team sport.
Very good. We're going to do a few commercials, and then we have several more questions for you. So depending on how much time we have at the end, if you can stick around, we'd
sure.
love to. Perfect. All right. So, Michael, what did we learn tonight? Other than that he's an interesting storyteller, which we already knew.
Yeah, well, I learned about changing money in Korea. I don't think that applies anymore, as I think that their currency is pretty...
Yeah, I think their laws have changed.
Yeah, and I just enjoyed some great stories, and I learned to declare my money coming in and out of the country, which I would have anyway.
I think I learned that if he ever asked me to be one of his partners on a foreign trip, I would stock up on brown pants. I just think that's what would be appropriate.
Well, I think he would be a great person to tag along with on these trips.
Without a doubt. All right. So what's new and different at Wizard of Odds, other Wizard websites?
To be perfectly honest with you, there's not too much new. I've been really busy. Wizard of Odds, I added something about an Exacta game in Keno at the Orleans, which is no big deal. And there's a video poker game called Royal Court at the Palace Station. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, from years ago.
Yes.
It's like four jacks pays a different amount than four queens or four kings.
Yes, I finally got around to analyzing that, and I added something about that. Not too much new on any of my sites, to be perfectly
very good. Well, I'm glad you're perfectly honest with us. South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else. In May, they're having a Chevy a day promotion, which they're giving away your choice of one of three $25,000 Chevrolets every day, and drawings at 8:20 every night, and you have 24 hours to claim it. Four additional players earn $250 in Chevron gas cards each night. If you claim your Chevy within 10 minutes, you get a bonus package worth about $5,000, which includes taxes on the car, registration, dealer's fees, and $2,000 in gas. If you don't want the car, you can take a $15,000 cash option instead. If you want a more expensive car, so maybe, you know, $40,000 car, the casino will pay the first $25,000 and towards whatever Finley Chevrolet will sell you. You earn tickets playing slots or video poker starting tomorrow, Friday the 27th. So you play $1,250 coin in each day, earns you the maximum number of tickets, and your tickets stay in the drum for the entire month. So this is an promotion where local players who are willing to go there every day and play 1250, which includes low rollers, 1250 isn't that much, have the best chance to win. Now, to be eligible on any given night, you need to swipe your card at a kiosk between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. There's going to be more people hanging out there because of this $5,000 bonus, so the kiosks are likely to get crowded. Some people will not make it. So swipe early. The Palms. The Play, Earn, and Win promotion Monday, Wednesday, Friday for tomorrow and Monday is heating up, which includes charcoal grill, wood-burning fire pit, or $50 Visa card. Starting Wednesday, they're going to shift into a Mother's Day theme, which would be a gift cards for Edible Arrangements or TJ Maxx. Scarves, perfume, and the like. There's going to be Apple Cash Drawings Friday and Saturday this weekend. They've been having this one all month. There are no drawings announced now at Palms for next month. They normally have swipes where you come in on Tuesday and Sunday and play 25 points or 100 points or something like that and swipe your card and you get small gifts. They're having that this time, but in addition, they're having it. So in addition to your small gift, you get a letter. You want to spell out LAMPS, L-A-M-P-S, or of course you could pronounce that Palms if you wanted to. So each time you do it, you get one letter. So there's 9 possible times you can collect it. They will have a maximum of 45 winners of getting $500, which just means there's going to be 45 of one of the letters. I don't know which one it is, maybe the A, and a fairly equal distribution of the other 4 letters. So even if you get that magic letter, you still have to get the other 4, which is not a sure thing, even with 8 picks. But it is offered. And good. NVidiaPoker.com, their tournament, which goes now through the end of the month, is 10-play Ultimate X. You play 100 hands. Top scores win $500. There's also a bonus game where you can win an annual gold membership worth $79.95. And that is for if you get the most bonus, if you get the most empty bonuses. Now, in Ultimate X, if you earn a hand this time, maybe a full house, you're going to get a bonus of 4 times or 6 times or 8 times, depending on the game, for the next hand. If you get a bonus of 8 and you get 0 in that particular space next time, then you get credit for a bonus of 8. So the maximum bonus you can get on any given hand is 12. So if you were dealt a hand giving you a 12x bonus and you decided to hold something to give you nothing, then you would have 120 towards a bonus, and that would be a good start towards winning that that other prize. Good. All right. So our guest next week will be Nolan Dalla. Nolan is the media director of the World Series of Poker. The World Series of Poker runs annually. And this year, there's going to be several new additions to it, including last several years, they had a November 9. They were not going to have a November 9 this year, so we're going to find out why not. And there's several new changes, so we're going to be talking to Nolan next week. All right. So we got about 6 minutes to go. Is that enough time to tell your Alan Wood story, Munch?
Sure, I think so. Talking about the $7,000, the trial.
I'm talking about the trial.
Yeah. So, I mean, what happens among gamblers is, sometimes there is a dispute about, about whatever, usually about money or whatever. And the way that professional gamblers handle that is, in my experience, is you convene a panel of other professional gamblers and basically tell your story, and they make a judgment, just like court. So one year, Alan and Malcolm, who was from New Zealand, they were up in Reno. Back then, there was this incredible deal where you could go to Canada and get Canadian dollars and basically buy them for, let's say, 93 cents and take them to Reno, and Reno would give you face value. So you make like 7% just by going to Canada and getting this money. So that's what they were in Reno to do, was to pass all this Canadian money, and I was up there with my team, and so we ran into each other and, went to the hotel room. And, of course, the night of revelry and backgammon ensued. And at some point, Alan and Malcolm needed some American dollars. And so somebody gave them, from our team, somebody gave them $7,000 American dollars. So Now, Alan then was the person who called me about playing in Korea. And at the time, you know, he called me and said, look, I found this really good game and, you know, you could go play it for me. I said, look, I'm kind of involved with these other guys. And he said, well, how about your whole team goes to Korea and plays it and just let me invest? And we were like, okay, great. So our team was really good at winning money, but we were really bad at keeping records. I mean, like world-class bad at keeping records. And, you know, we had money in all different continents and different currencies. And but anyway, at some point, one of the guys said, hey, Alan, you know, don't you owe us that $7,000? And Alan said, no, I paid that back. And you know, we didn't have very good records, but one of the guys had written on something that, you know, Alan owed $7,000, and, you know, he was sure that Alan hadn't paid it back. So what do? We had to convene this. You know, we got a few people to come listen to the story. And if you read Gambling Wizards, you know, one of them was Kathy Hulbert. One of them was Tommy Hylands, who are both in the book. Alan Woods was in the book. There was a third person. And so, you know, basically we tell our story and bring our bad records. And at one point, now Malcolm now gets up, and he is the one, right, that was there with Alan. And he comes out like he's Perry Mason, and he says, now Alan, isn't it true that you have been known, after having a big loss in the casino, you go up to your hotel room and pleasure yourself?
Okay.
Yeah. And Alan said, well, yeah, sometimes I do that. And he said, and isn't it true, after one particularly big loss,
2 minutes,
you found yourself unable to pleasure yourself, and so you took your Johnson and shoved it into a bucket of ice. And Alan said, well, yeah, but what does that have to do with anything? And Malcolm says, nothing. I just love telling people that story.
Oh, I can just imagine that for years you can't get that image out of...
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Malcolm loved to embarrass people publicly, so...
Sounds like he was good at it.
Yeah.
What was your first time that you go? We got about a minute to go. Your first gambling bet that you remember?
You know, I don't know for sure that this is the first time, but it may have been. I remember my father used to use the word plethora, but he would pronounce it incorrectly. He would say plethora, and I was maybe 7 years old or something, and I would hear him saying plethora this and plethora that. So I went to the dictionary, and I looked it up and saw that he was pronouncing it incorrectly, that it's plethora, right? So I lay in wait, as they say, and sure enough, one day he came and said something about a plethora, and I said, you know, I think that word's plethora. Now, remember, I'm like seven, you know.
He's precocious, like, seven.
Yeah, okay, precocious seven. He goes, no, it's plethora. I said, well, I'm pretty sure it's plethora. He's like, no, it's plethora. I said, well, I don't have a lot of money, but, you know, I think I have $2, I bet, that says it's plethora.
Uh-huh. 10 seconds.
I think that was the first bet I remember winning.
Sounds like you won that one. Thank you very much for being here, Munch.
Yeah,
go out welcome. And hit lots of royal flushes, everybody.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.